This is about self-government. This is about free people in a free society, freely debating ideas, trying to find consensus on the basis of their disagreements. We want warriors in our democracy. We want people who are willing to go into the arena and fight. I think I'm a warrior, but I must tell you, I'm not sure that I would go into the arena again, the way it's structured. Our democracy is on the line. And if decent people don't come forward and say, enough, I fear for the outcome. Our political parties did not serve us well in this campaign. We tried. Democrats hid behind a silly slogan, mend it, don't end it. And I must tell you, I have worked long and hard for my fellow Republicans. I've raised millions of dollars, and I've donated a fair sum, and I will continue to do so. But we forgot what Lincoln said in 1860 when he said, neither let us be slandered from our duty by false accusations against us, nor frightened from it by menaces of destruction to the government, nor of dungeons to ourselves. Let us have faith that right makes might, and in that faith, let us to the end dare to do our duty as we understand it. We cowered. We cowered. We wouldn't discuss it at our convention, and we waited until the last 3 weeks of the campaign before we discussed it. Any political party that does not have the courage to defend its convictions doesn't deserve to win. It's as simple as that. There's nothing that more clearly defines what is right about this nation than Proposition 209. And the moral imperative of treating every American citizen the same, equally in the eyes of their government. We should never cower in defense of that proposition. Never. When my family went to California in 1947, we were attracted by the lure of equal opportunity. We were seduced by the spirit of California, the promise of that Walt Disney character, Jiminy Cricket, who said you could wish upon a star, that it made no difference who you are, and all your dreams could come true. That was the attraction of California. Last Tuesday, the people of California restored that spirit, the lure that brought my family and so many others to that magical place that we call California. Like that tree standing by the water in the old spiritual, we should never be removed or never move from our commitment that we will judge its citizens, all of our citizens, by their merit and not by their skin color, gender, or ethnicity. It is not presumptuous of us to believe that the rest of the world is watching this American experiment with democracy, because indeed they are. We cannot let them and ourselves down. The story of Proposition 209 is not just about ending the era of preferences. Is about our capacity to govern ourselves. People from all over America joined the battle of democracy that was being waged in California. They represented both sides of the issue, and they campaigned to reach popular consensus on a policy question that affects every man, woman, and child in this nation. The California Civil Rights Initiative was placed on the ballot by the people. It was promoted by the people. And like a laser beam, it was the people who pierced through the clutter of an ugly campaign by the opponents of 209 to find the target, race and gender preferences. The passage of 209 is a reminder that indeed there is nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come. It is a reaffirmation that nothing more singularly defines American democracy than the courage and conviction of ordinary people. It is a warning that the flame of rebellion burns bright in the American spirit. It is eloquent testimony that our system of government is alive and well and worthy of our most vigorous defense. May the good Lord bless our beloved America. Thank you very much.
Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. My guest today has been on the front lines for decades, fighting against affirmative action and fighting for actual equality, honesty, transparency, and everything else. Ward Connerly is somebody that has inspired me endlessly, and I'm so honored to welcome you to the show, sir.
Thank you, Mel. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. For my audience that might not know you, can you tell a little bit about your background? Because you have been a fighter for a very long time for liberty and freedom.
Well, I was born in 1939 of the year of our Lord and Savior, and in Louisiana, Leesville, Louisiana, which is significant when you realize my melanin content. This was during the days of Jim Crow, and there was a C on my birth certificate, Mel, with that C signified colored. And from that point on, I had to make my marks in Louisiana and the country that I love so dearly as a colored guy. And I don't have any problem with being colored, but I do have a problem with my society classifying me on the basis of my skin color and then treating me differently than it would treat you, for example, based on your melanin content. That was in 1939, and I have fought to erase the C ever since then, and that is the basis of my being involved in what is described as affirmative action.
Yeah. Now you also were you're in California, and you were at the University of California for quite a long time. You were on the front lines of affirmative action being instituted into university admissions processes. Can you talk a little bit about when you first were called to talk about why that was a problem and exactly, you know, when you started fighting this fight? Because it was well before most people even understood what that meant and what that meant for the future of our country.
Sure, just to make sure now that your audience understands, I wasn't involved in instituting it.
Oh, right. No.
Affirmative action was instituted in 1961 by John F. Kennedy as a way of transitioning the Negro from Jim Crow into American society, and it was revised by President Johnson in 1965. And over the years, it morphed into a system of race preferences, which marginalized those who didn't need it and who achieved on their own. And it discriminated, outright discriminated against people of Asian descent in higher education, as well as Asian descent and whites in other venues. And I was appointed, I say I was sentenced to the Board of Regents by my friend Pete Wilson, who was governor in 1993, to a 12-year unpaid term with responsibility for oversight of the university and all of the campuses therein, and law schools and the medical schools and hospitals under the province of UC.
Right.
And it was at that point that I realized, as I chaired the Education Committee on Educational Policy, that the university was outright discriminating. It had higher standards based on race. And it started out with California resident, and then it was, the classification was California resident who was Black or Native American or Latino, California resident who was white, California resident who was of Asian descent, and it required additional points for those as you graduated up to the next category. And the difference between a California resident, garden variety California resident, and a California resident who was, let's say, Asian descent, could be 1,000 points.
Wow.
1,000 points, Mel, is the difference between an A and a C plus. And that system was designed by the university to diminish the number of people who were of Asian descent or white, the next category, to diminish their admission into the student body in the name of diversity. And as a guy born in the South, the C on his birth certificate, I said, this is discrimination. This isn't right. And so that began my involvement as a regent. And that was in 1994 that we dealt with that, to get rid of that, because it just wasn't right. And I had joined an effort to go to the court, the Supreme Court, in 2003 to right. get this idiotic system abolished. But the court inexplicably said that the use of race in the interest of achieving diversity, as long as race was only one of many factors, we should remember that, one of many factors, it was constitutionally acceptable. Well, Justice Thomas thought that was wrong and that I was right, notwithstanding the Supreme Court ruling that it was permissible, and that was in 2003. And Justice O'Connor famously said that she hoped that this would no longer be necessary in 25 years. Well, in 2023, June 29th of this year, Justice Thomas led the way to have the court basically overturn that decision, and they ruled by a 6-3 margin that race preferences violate the Equal Protection Clause of the U.S. Constitution, the 14th Amendment. And that is not the end of my journey into this forest, but it is a very significant decision, a landmark decision by the Supreme Court. I don't have any doubt that Harvard and all of the others that trigger this lawsuit will probably try to circumvent it, but we, the American people, are going to have to dig in, and on your show and others, and make sure that that decision is not only the law of the land, but it's the way that we behave in the various institutions of this country.
Yeah, I think it's becoming quite obvious, even with recent situations happening on university campuses, that something went terribly wrong in this evolution of using the concept of diversity. Now they use the word equity, which is not equality. Inclusion, which apparently they can use however they would like to define inclusion. And since this new regime came in, not only do I believe that they will try to circumvent it, but they've also expanded this diversity, equity, inclusion thing to include all of government. So now we have a situation where there was a win in the Supreme Court, rightly so. It should have happened a long time ago. But now we have a regime in Washington, D.C. that apparently is trying to expand this, not only through their corporate partners, but through the government, to make this normal. And it's amazing that it has expanded into many different spheres, when it used to just be in in academia. What are you watching here? Where do you think this is coming from? And how is this affecting our society? Because I think it's terrible.
You are so right. It is coming from, and I'm reluctant to say it, but I'm not known for biting my tongue. It's political.
Yeah.
We have a president who is compromised beyond belief. When Joe Biden was making his third attempt to be the president, he was just about out of the campaign. He was down on his knees, basically, because the voters weren't buying it. And Congressman Clyburn,
right,
endorsed him. He's a prominent member of the Black Caucus in the Congress. And that endorsement gave him life. And instead of losing for the third time, he was victorious. And I'll never forget that when he was having a press conference after that endorsement, he promised, many people did not take note of that, but I did. But he promised that he would become the most progressive president in American history. Say what you will about Joe Biden up until that time, he was an old school politician who said something and he believed that he had an obligation to be faithful to what he said. And he has since that time strived to be faithful to his commitment, basically to the progressives, Bernie Sanders and AOC and a lot of the others, that he would in fact become the most progressive president in U.S. history. And I believe he has done that.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's to the misfortune of the country, because in immigration, progressives believe in no borders, race preferences. You've never seen a preference that a progressive doesn't like. And so our country is in big, big trouble to a large extent because of this ideology that President Biden has promised to fulfill.
Yeah, you know, you lived through this too in the 60s too. There was a movement in the 60s that seems very similar to a lot of this stuff that's gone on. They were the Weather Underground, but they were also in line with the Black Panthers and all kinds of things. This isn't the first time that we've seen this. It's just this time it appears that they have a much more malleable student body. And this time it's also gone all the way back to from kindergarten through K through 12, through college, through the government. And it's causing, I think, a very big divide that is totally manufactured. And I really see it as detrimental more to the people that are buying it than to the people that aren't. What is different now than the movement that happened in the 60s when the original, in my opinion, progressive or Democrat socialists like Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn and all of them did their movement? It was pretty significant. It was during the Vietnam War. But right now I see this as much more successful in them really like fundamentally transforming America in the wrong direction.
I think that the big difference is that all of the boundaries that a civil society needs the walls are tumbling down. We live at a time where nothing is sacred. Nothing seems to apply anymore. We call it the woke era. And that means that if you don't think you're a woman, you can become a man. If you're not, don't think you're a man, you can become a woman. And our culture is being turned upside down because of this progressive ideology in which nothing goes anymore. Nothing is sacred. Society has no rules that you can live by. You know, when I was growing up, I may not have always abided by the rules, but I knew what they were.
Right.
I think I did abide by most of them. But the progressives are redefining crime. California, if you steal a purse out of Neiman Marcus for $900, you don't get held accountable for it.
Now, I wanted to ask you about something else. So there's this new thing. I'm sure you just saw Gavin Newsom just appointed another person to take over for Dianne Feinstein. Again, just like with Kamala Harris, just like with Ketanji Jackson, we are being told that the only option is a Black woman. And when every time that this happens, this is now the third time in major in front of the entire country and the world that they are saying that there's a preference for Black women in these positions of power. Also the UN ambassador, same thing. And they announce it beforehand. To me, this is very insulting to the person that they're picking. But when you hear that, it's like they're conflating two things. Now it's women and Black will be the preference in these major positions regardless. And I really think that it's taken a whole nother turn, that this is normalized, and we've now seen it four times happen in the last 2 years.
Well, you raise a subject that I've been chewing on in the last 2 weeks. And the issue that I see in California is this. We have a provision in our state constitution which says, quote, the state shall not discriminate against or grant preferential treatment to any individual or race on the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin in the operation of public employment, public education, or public contracting. That's significant because Proposition 209, which ended race preferences in public education, is part of the Constitution. And when Governor Newsom appoints someone to serve as a replacement to Senator Feinstein, is he or is he not violating the state constitution when he appoints someone solely on the basis of race? Maybe not solely, but did he take race into account? Because he said he would.
Right.
And may we file a lawsuit against him for violating the state constitution by discriminating in her favor, giving her a preference? He said he would.
Right.
Appoint a Black woman. So therefore, has he betrayed his duty as a governor to uphold and defend the state constitution? That is the issue that I've asked Pacific Legal Foundation to look at. And I don't know if we're going to run into a traditional belief that governors are taking executive action and therefore they're carrying out the people that elected them. That has gnawing in my throat for some time. Just because you're the governor or the president doesn't mean that you can willfully violate the Constitution and discriminate.
Right.
You know, you're not granted some special immunity from the law to not discriminate. And in this country, we've said discrimination is wrong.
Right.
When you appoint a Supreme Court justice and you've taken race into account and you're proud of it, you're admitting that you kind of discriminated.
Right.
You know, that shouldn't happen.
Yeah. And then she got to also, the woman that they did that with, then got to write the, because she was against the overturning of affirmative action, but she got to write exactly why. And if you read it, which I'm sure you did, you're thinking, this has nothing to do with it. Like she was, it was as if she didn't understand, which I'm sure she does, the ramifications of doing such a thing. And again, I find it very insulting to the people that are being chosen. They might be getting some kind of preference and some kind of, you know, position. But again, it's still, it was because of the color of her skin. And
no doubt about it.
And yet that's okay. And they're going down in history as setting a precedence of being chosen for anything but what you would think they would want to be chosen for, which is their superior, you know, abilities, cognitive abilities, ability to be fair, unbiased, their intellectual capabilities. It's like they're creating a future precedent that is very bad for this country. And you would think some of these people would say, no, I'm not interested. I don't want to be that. But I guess that's not their thoughts.
No, it's not. And we have fought for so hard for so long as a nation to create that more perfect union.
Right.
To have the Democrat Party, driven by the progressives, to ignore that, not only ignore it, to proudly pound their chest about diversity in promoting it. It's wrong. It's not only a precedent, Mel, it's taking the country in a different direction, entirely different direction. And I think the Supreme Court and my state of California,
right,
which we're proud of Prop 209, a lot of us are frustrated because we're not sure of whether we're on solid footing legally, because 209 doesn't address public education, public contracting, and public employment specifically. Well, it does. It's limited to that, but it doesn't go into this area of executive privilege and executive right. authority. But it's really bad for the country. Because I know that there are groups who are saying, well, what about us?
Right.
And then, you know, in California, we sort of forget it, but Black people are only 6% of the population. Asian are 14% and growing. And they have a legitimate right to say, well, if you're going to make decisions on the basis of race, what about us?
Right.
And once you start doing that, you're headed for some very stormy territory. The nation becomes very tumultuous again.
Again. And what's scary, too, is that I don't know if you saw this. I don't know who's writing for Joe Biden, his press releases and his tweets and stuff. But again, we had another year where this George Floyd Black Lives Matter movement. I feel like whenever there is anything takes them away from this this path down dividing people by race, by gender, all of this stuff, they pull back in this Black Lives Matter talking point and movement, and they're using it as a weapon. essentially, to shut anyone up if you say anything. And to me, it's so clear to me that that's what's happening here. Just this week, again, was another, like, let's remember, we're doing a memorial for George Floyd. And you're thinking again, like, what it makes it hard to believe that the entire movement wasn't manufactured to always be like a red herring or something to put out there. It's very strange.
In places like California, why are you stirring it up?
Yeah. And they are. And they use it again and again. Now, I did want to ask you about what it does to the community, because now we have this open borders thing. And I just left New York City, where there was, when I left, there were 60,000 illegals being bused into New York City, right where I, near where I live. This is very bad for the entire community, but it's also very bad for the community that they claim the entire George Floyd Black Lives Matter movement was supposed to be helping. And what's happening now, not only did they defund the police, did they, you know, empty out the jails, did they have no bail, but now they've in brought in 60,000 illegals. They're kicking a lot of people out of housing. They're kicking a lot of people out of shelters. I just think that, you know, it seems very disingenuous to have gone through all of that for Black Lives Matter and now suddenly be giving preference to the illegals over that community that they claim to be all of that was about. It just seems like total chaos.
It is total chaos. And it isn't limited to the southern border.
No.
It isn't limited to the places where the buses ushered by the Biden administration distributes people to throughout the nation. The ramifications of this have not been seen yet, but they will, in the area of healthcare, education, crime, law enforcement. As I said just a moment ago, I think we are, all the boundaries have been taken down in our country. Civilization as we know it is really being threatened. And the people don't realize yet the ramifications, in my opinion, of the lack of law and order of this administration. The president is who was characterized until this latter stage of his life really as a middle of the road kind of guy, an institutionalist. He was proud of being elected to the Senate and his service to the country. I don't know where that guy has gone. And again, I don't want to sound like a partisan, but I just don't understand why. I know why he is doing what he is doing, because he made that commitment to be the most progressive president in American history. And progressives swear by race and open borders. But this president is really destroying America as we know it.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that's come out of this, too, is you've seen it your whole life, but I think most people didn't see the war machine, the military industrial complex, with as much light shown on it as they have during the Ukraine situation. We are still sending hundreds of billions of dollars to Ukraine. And at the same time, while America, inner cities to rural areas, to our infrastructure, to our grid, all of these things, to our homeless problem, mental health problem, now they're showing us, well, we have the money to solve all these problems. And obviously you're one of them. We have the thinkers to have the solutions. We're just not interested in doing that in America. And I think that there's also counter revolution kind of here, with people saying, well, why aren't we fixing our own country, and why are we doing that? I think that kind of there's a awakening of people thinking, well, I thought it was about money, but obviously it's not about money. You know, like it's very, I think it's shocking to people that this is, when it comes to a war in a foreign country, we have all the money in the world. When it comes to saving and cleaning up and helping our own nation and people, they're not interested.
Well, the political system is broken. And if the political system is broken, America is broken. I often have problems with things that former President Trump says and does. And I voted for the guy twice in the interest of full disclosure. The Democrats impeached him twice. Sometimes you can find justifiable political cause for it, for misconduct. That's the wrong word, but you can say, well, I can understand why he did it, why they did it. Well, they did it because he poked them in the eye too often and just wanted to not get along. But we can do that to Trump because he defends the country, but we can't do it, impeach President Biden, who, if you really sit down for 30 minutes and you look at the consequences of what he's doing to the country, often by his inaction, it's not him, it's people around him, I think, who are triggering the actions that he's taking. The country's being turned upside down.
It seems on purpose, and that's what the hardest part of it is that it's by design. All of these things are nonsensical if you wanted to make the country better. Let me ask you about persecution of Donald Trump. I have a lot of people on my show that are foreign, and they are very, very disturbed and in shock of what the Department of Justice, or whatever you want to call them, including the three Soros-chosen attorney generals, district attorney in Georgia, the district attorney in New York City, and the New York attorney general. The amount of persecution, lawfare, what they're doing to this man is, it's hard to believe. From where you're sitting, you know, having been on the front lines for decades watching the political system, have you ever seen, could you even imagine what's happening now? This just seems so, it doesn't even seem real half the time.
The six states, I believe it is, have said they won't even allow him on the ballot. They are far left states, progressive states, for the most part. But we don't take it seriously. We don't hop on the horse and ride out and try to bring some sanity to what's going on. As I said, there are no boundaries anymore in education, in society. We have gender fluidity. It's a crazy time. We live in crazy time.
What are some solutions, do you think? How can we turn this around? I know what you're saying. It's very frustrating. In the past, I think because of January 6th, maybe, but in the past, people would have not tolerated so much. But at this point, you know, it's like that Yuri Bezmenov interview from the 80s when he talks about how the KGB was going to infiltrate America with dehumanization and demoralization and normalization and crisis. And you're thinking, well, we are way past that point.
Well, I don't know. I just don't know. Even offering a solution can get you on the list to be outed. Because I think it isn't just in law enforcement. It isn't just in education. it is in the culture. And we think it's okay to say certain things and not to say other things. There wasn't a time when I would have ever expected a U.S. senator to ask someone, what is a woman? And to have hesitancy in answering and stumbling around. I don't know how you answer that legitimately, but there's never been any doubt, has there, in our society about sex. Who is what? What do you mean, Senator, asking me that? Here's what a woman is. Here's what a man is. Woman perpetuates civilization, recreates, and it takes you into a territory that is uncomfortable, and you don't want to be outed and put on the list to be canceled and all of that. When I was growing up, certain things were not in doubt. We hold these truths to be self-evident. But we now live in a time in which nothing is certain anymore. There are no boundaries. You can say whatever you want. The government is not only standing by, it's because of the government often that the boundaries have been removed.
Yeah. Now, what about, they're passing a lot of legislation or trying to, I think, in my opinion, it's a violation of the Constitution and everything that was intended by the founders and a Bill of Rights. But what they are trying to do is they're trying to pass a lot of legislation. I saw they want to pass legislation for that you have to call people the right pronouns. They're trying to pass legislation against Islamophobia, and then there's one against anti-Semitism, and then there's one against, calling somebody the wrong gender. None of this is really the responsibility of the federal government. In fact, I believe that they're all violations of the Constitution. So when they're trying to legislate people's behavior or people's thinking, it's impossible. And yet they keep doing that. And I just can't believe that there's not more pushback as to that's not the job of the federal government or the government at all.
Say what you will about Donald Trump, and I often do, for my own reasons, he was a strong guy. He is a strong guy. But now my counter is that to be a leader, you have to show some strength, political strength. But you need support from a large swath of the American people.
Right.
And while former President Trump commands strong support within the Republican Party, the Republican Party is still the minority party. And when you poke rhinos in the eye after you've lost the election, and let me just say that election was lost. I don't buy into the notion that it was stolen. There might have been irregularities. There were irregularities approved by various states, by the executives of those states. But I'm not convinced that those constituted a sufficient number to turn the results of the election. President Trump is despised by a significant number of Americans that he lost. And in my opinion, he lost because of his conduct. Politics is a game, as you know, that is a team sport. You don't anger the Bush family, Cheney, Romney and a lot of others who are traditional Republicans, if you became a Republican about 10 years ago and expect them to support you when you run for office, it is unrealistic to expect that. And so I have real fear about the next election in 2024, despite the conduct of Joe Biden, who has been the worst president in my lifetime, being beaten this time by former President Trump, even though I think he should win by 20 points.
Right.
The fact that it is so close worries me. It worries me because we cannot endure another 4 years of President Biden.
No. We can't. We can't. And we're losing. The scary part is right now we have so many fields of contention going on, not just in our own country, but all over the world. And it does appear that other nations, including Russia and China, are empowered by what's happening here. And that yeah. would be what would happen. But that is the scariest part of all of everything that's happening is that the rest of the world, now Iran, obviously, Qatar, North Korea, that they're all seeing opportunities of the weakness or the progressive ideals of Joe Biden. And that becomes a whole nother level of danger. And that certainly cannot go forward from here. But that's another part of this whole scenario that is very scary.
And I'm worried. I really am. Because there's so much at stake.
Right.
We're three years into this transformation that Senator Sanders promised and Joe Biden is delivering on to become the most progressive president in American history. So that tells me that he's not really calling the shots. Four more years of this, I don't know where I can go if I decided to live out the last 6 years of my life, according to the actuarials, if not America.
Nobody does.
I do not look forward to this country being my place of domicile.
Well, hopefully it won't be, but God knows you did a lot along the way to change that. I just hope that it's not too far gone. I still feel like the good work that you've done and other people have done along the way still exists. I believe that if they do in 2024 continue down this road and God forbid they maintain the White House, I don't think America will survive in its as the Constitution and Bill of Rights being the law of the land. I really don't. These people are much more, it seems to me, aligned with a globalist agenda that is post-American. I remember there were pictures of Obama walking around with a book by like Zakaria that was like the post-American world. And everyone was like, why is he carrying that book? But that's what it feels like with these people.
Yeah.
So I'm worried about it. So any last words for the audience to kind of... have any idea what, you know, going forward they should be focusing on? Because we can't put down our you know, we can't just surrender, but we are in serious trouble. And I'm not sure that the American people really fully understand the stakes of which we face here.
I don't think they do. We do. Remember this, though. It's really we the people. We the people. And in California, which is viewed as a blue state because we typically vote that way, I'm convinced that the people do not buy into things that come out of our legislature.
Right.
And that are promoted by the governor of this state. We have so many people who have come to America within the last 3 decades, and they register as Democrats because they believe in democracy, even without understanding what it means. Right. They believe in democracy. It sounds like something that's in their, it's in their benefit, to their benefit. They register as Democrats. Democrat Party says, hey, we've got 60% of the people who believe in democracy. They're registered Democrats. They vote Democrats. But those are the same people that support Prop 209. It's the same group of people that, as I talk on the airwaves, who say, Ward, what are we going to do about this state? So I'm convinced that what we've been seeing over the last 20 years, people vote Democrat, but they register Democrat, but they vote as independents.
Right.
If we can get them to, if we stop worrying about who's registered as Republican or Democrat, get them to pull away from the registration on issues that matter, the economy, crime, and the like, there is still hope.
I agree.
Because there is a lot of discontent about what's happening in places like San Francisco, the tent encampments. They voted out members of the school board. These same people who register Democrats, there's a high level of disaffection, and they want to change. And the party that has had a monopoly on things, they're not going to have the same monopoly in 2024 and 26 that they had beyond that point. And I just am convinced that we can get, if we're smart about it, we can get more people to pull away from their registration.
Yep.
And so I share your optimism. The other thing is we need to get everybody that hears your show, tunes into it, watches it, line up five more people to tune into Mel and build that army that we need in the country.
Yep.
We need to build that army to take back the culture.
Yep.
Because our problem really is the progressives have grabbed the culture by the throat and they won't let go. We cannot lose those who believe in common sense and our country as it was and still is to a large extent. We cannot lose in 2024. We cannot.
Nope, we cannot. And Ward Connerly, he is an amazing, amazing man. All his links are below. He has been fighting for equality, not equity, equality, and America and freedom and liberty for decades. And he's not done. He's not done anytime soon. Thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate you being here. You're one of my favorite people, and I'll see you again.
Thank you, dear.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Colleen, speak.
I am so honored and pleased to be with my fellow Americans who happen to be of Asian descent, along with my background, which is all over the darn planet. We're here in the truest tradition. Janice Camarena. Think about that last name. Janice Camarena. My ally of 25, 26 years in this battle. Our being here today is consistent with the truest tradition of our nation. An injustice is being done, and we come to ask that it be addressed. Do the right thing. Make sure that all of us receive the full measure of equality. One of the things that I learned as a person serving a 12-year sentence on the Board of Regents of the University of California was that indeed discrimination was occurring. People of Asian descent were marginalized. Their kids were told, go to school, work hard, study, and good things will happen. University of California, on which I was serving as a regent, was making a lie of that. Different standards for kids on the basis of their skin color and where their granddaddy happened to have been born, that was occurring. A point system by Berkeley was being used. I could do no less than say, this is wrong. Stop it. And so we joined the history of this country, which was founded, as Lincoln said, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. That includes people like me, black people. That includes people of Asian descent. Americans who were classified as colored, and I was born with a C on my birth certificate. That was not for Connerly, it was for colored. We had to fight to get that C acknowledged as a full American. And what is happening today is that your citizens, members of the court, are here to ask you to correct the mistake that you made. Tomorrow, my dear friend Ed Bloom is going to join with the attorneys as a plaintiff and Students for Fair Admission and formally petition the government to do the right thing. They will be civil. They will use the merits of the law. But I'm here not as an attorney. I'm not a member of the bar. I have enough problems to deal with. But I am here as a citizen to say, when you allowed the use of race as one of many factors for admission to college, you unleashed racism of the worst kind. And I am not a man of many factors in the eyes of my government. I am a colored man, a Negro, a black man, a person of color, but they never see anything other than color. So for the court to allow the use of race, they were legitimizing discrimination. The only public institution in our society that is allowed to discriminate are select colleges and universities. That's wrong. And so I say to the court, do the right thing and correct your mistake. Yes. And so we all have to recognize that this is not just about Harvard or the University of North Carolina. There are only a small number of people who even want to go to Harvard. But all of us are citizens of America. And this is about how we interact with each other, how we work with each other, how we lock arms to make this country a better country. And fulfill the fulfill the promise of America. Dr. King had a dream. I have a nightmare that if we don't get this right, if we don't get it right, diversity and equity and inclusion will be the death of the country that we love and that we know. So we're asking the court to fulfill once and for all the promise of we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. In Webster, that means you can't take that away from us. That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's all we ask. That's all we ask. We're not asking for a holiday as you gave Dr. King. Just give us our rights. Thank you.
Thank you, Ward. Thank you.
I know you love her as much as I love her. I can't get enough of Dr. Stella. She's one of my greatest friends, and I have to tell you, she is a maverick. She has done so much for this country. She was the original frontline doctors out there. We all saw her down there in D.C. telling us that the COVID story was not what we were getting, that she believed that ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, zinc, quercetin was the way to go. She also created a whole line of COVID preparedness products, including CoviLite, which is my favorite. I take it every day. But what Stella's also done, and it's really important because we keep hearing about supply chain issues and that there's antibiotic shortages and all of that. Well, Stella, again, tops herself. She has a preparedness pack that has everything you could possibly need in it. It has antibiotics. It has Z-Pack. It has stuff for even urinary tract infection. It has zinc. It has all kinds of things, including anything that could come your way. Honestly, she has prepared ahead of time. She also has an amazing, amazing telehealth program that really is the best you can get out there. And you know what? She has partnerships with private pharmacies all over this country. You should stock up now on a hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, get the preparedness pack with the antibiotics. All of the COVID products are great. CoviLite is a great daily choice also because it has all kinds of stuff for immune system, but also it has everything you could need vitamin-wise in that too. I highly recommend it. Dr. Stella Emanuel is an amazing, amazing woman. She has gone out of her way to make sure that you are prepared, that you are never left behind, that you have your health and your wellness taken care of. Please go to themelkayshow.com, go down to Dr. Stella MD, click on that, use the code MELKAY. You'll get a discount over there from Stella. But I am telling you right now, there is no woman right now that is working harder to maintain our health, our integrity, our liberty, and our futures. Thank you so much. Dr. Stella supports me, and that means she supports this show, she supports free speech, and she supports God winning in the end always. Thank you. The narrative is falling apart, but as it does, there's so much of this fraudulent disinformation, misinformation, censorship coming from the globalists. And what we need to do is be focused on the facts, cut through everything, be discerning, and get it first and foremost out there to everyone. It is important that you know what is going on. Censorship is getting nuts. You guys know it. There's accounts all over the place that are fake, that are not me. I know you guys send me emails and I really appreciate it. And you report it and it's on Telegram and Instagram and Twitter and they're not me. So I'm super excited to announce We the People with Mel Kay. Be the first to join. It's a VIP community, just you and me behind a paywall, no trolls, no nothing. We get to know each other. I will give you the facts first. I break a lot of stories a long time before other people. We can talk about past, present, future, history, what we're doing now, solutions for going forward, what 2024 is going to look like. I'm going to do breaking news, do a lot of deep dives. I'm going to bring that information to you guys first in a live Q&A every week. So please click the link below and join me over there. We are going to create a community that is censorship proof. It's cancel proof. It's truth. It's transparency. It's on the road to God, country, justice, everything that we want in one place. This is the most incredible, amazing time to be alive. As hard as it seems and as difficult as the battle has been for you guys and definitely for me, all I know is that we all are part of the solution. We are all involved and invested, and you guys have the passion that I have. So let's join together. on live Q&As once a week with me, Mel Kay. We, the people of the United States, taking back this nation. This is so exciting, guys. I've been dying to do this, and we finally got the technology right. So please join me. Click the link below. Can't wait to get started.